Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. So who are you and where did you come from?
I am Monique and I'm from Crumlin.
Monique, tell me what it was like for you growing up in Crumlin. And when I say for you, I mean for you because you're transgender.
So, you know, growing up in Crumlin, you know, could be pretty hard, you know, being a queer kid, you know, and not knowing, you know, that you, what queer is or transgender is, you know, no education or anything, you know, in the 80s. I would have, you know, found it difficult, you know, because I was expressing femininity from such a young age, I would, like, you know, walk around with a tea cloth on my head, and I was obsessed with Barbies and My Little Pony, and, you know, my whole demeanor would have been feminine, you know. So, you know, growing up in Crumlin, the kids used to just, like, slag me and, you know, I wasn't getting a good response. I was constantly getting a negative response, you know. So, you know, as a child, like, when I kept on getting this response, like, you know, I started to feel a little bit shameful and embarrassed about myself, you know. And it was just, so that's what it was kind of like, you know, from a young age.
At what age did you start to feel shameful?
Do you know what? I think I always felt embarrassed, you know, about it, you know, like, because I would hide the dolls and stuff like that and at home. And then there was more levels of shame, you know, like, so at the start, you know, it wouldn't have been too, you know, too bad. It was just, I would still do it, but I would hide the dolls and stuff like that. I'd kind of do it in secret, you know. But then as I was getting older, you know, and I wanted to fit in more, then I started, you know, getting more shameful and kind of uncomfortable with myself, you know, with my kind of natural self. Like,
because Amy, when she was saying that, Amy, the hippie hunt, she did one with me.
Yeah.
And she was saying that, like, she started to put makeup on and started to dress feminine, you know, even though she knew that she was gay. Mm. She was, like, just doing that to try and fit in with people.
Yeah.
So is that what you were doing?
I started doing that, you know. Masculine myself, you know, to fit in more, and, you know, like, the way I walked, the way I spoke, you know, I had, like, long hair, kind of in the middle split, and, you know, some people would think, you know, that I was a girl back then, and the shame I used to feel inside, you know, because I just used to know the response I was getting with that, you know, totally, like, slagged and kind of picked on. You know, I did start trying to change myself. You know, I remember at 16, I left school at 15. I went to an all-boys school, and it was, you know, pretty hard in that school. Like, the teachers didn't know what to do with me and stuff like that. And so I started working in Peter Marks, and when in a hairdresser's. And when I, you know, my mum would have, you know, kind of influenced me to be a hairdresser because I loved hair. I was always kind of playing with hair and stuff like that. Like, I love playing with her hair. I love playing with the Barbie's hair. So I went to work in there, and I remember it was my 16th birthday, and, you know, some girl passed a comment saying that I was a girl, and the shame I felt because of that. I went in and cut all my hair off. They wouldn't cut my hair, so I got a scissors and cut all the hair off. And I think that was kind of then the turning point with me, where I had enough of my femininity. You know, I had enough of people passing comment on me, you know, and I really wanted to change myself then.
Change yourself into what?
Into more of a, you know, kind of a more manly, you know, like growing up in Crumlin as well, like, you know, you kind of had to be hard, you know, there was a lot of toxic masculinity, you know, and I would have had, like, you know, so I wanted to be that, you know, to fit in, you know, in the area, you know, because I wanted to be liked, you know. And I was always, you know, wanted to be in the group that was the most maddest or the most roughest. So I would be going out, like, trying to prove myself, you know, to get into this group, you know, that I was just as mad and I was just as tough. And
doing things like what?
Like, I would physically get into fights, you know, like, I would get into fights and... I walked around with this, like, you know, I walked around with this huge chip on my shoulder, you know, and it used to attract attention. When I think about it now, I was looking for, you know, like, to take attention to stuff, but I used to actually attract it because I'd walk around with this attitude, so it used to kind of bring, like, trouble to me, you know. I was like a magnet to, I couldn't go anywhere, you know. And, you know, people would, you know, be passing comments, and then I would be standing up for myself and I wouldn't let it go and all this. So I'd physically get into fights, you know, and stuff like that.
And what, like, would your mum say? Would she, like, want to kill you when she got you at home?
She would get me to stand up for myself, you know. She would kind of try and support me, you know, but she would get me to stand up for myself.
And in school, like, did you have friends then through those groups? Or
I did have friends, but in school, you know, I left school when I was 15, and... in school was very difficult because I went to an all-boys school, and I would have got bullied in school, but I would have stood up to the bullies. But I couldn't concentrate in school. You know, like, I didn't do well whatsoever in school. I was constantly getting into trouble. You know, I remember I just used to stare out the window and... be like, nothing would go in. The teacher would be... And the teachers just left me to my own advices. You know, they didn't try to intervene with me, and, you know, because I start acting out, you know, like, and I think I was acting out to kind of protect myself. It was like, it was all part of survival, really, for me, because I was trying to be, you know, like, the hardest of the class, like, you know, so people would just back off, and to prove myself as well, you know, that I wasn't, you know, because back then, like, you know, being feminine or, you know, being part of the, you know, the queer kids, like, people thought you were weak, you know, and people thought that you were an easy target, that they could, you know, they could jump on you and, you know, like, they could bully you and stuff like that. Like, so it was kind of me trying to kind of stand up for myself. So, like, kind of skill work and everything kind of went out the window. It was just all about that then, you know.
Were you always on edge?
I was very removed from myself. I wasn't on edge. When I think about it now, like, you know, I became very disconnected with myself. And that's why I used to stare out the window, you know, because I think I just used to be kind of daydreaming and, you know, kind of that kind of thing.
And then when you left school, you went into Petermark, as you said.
I went into Petermark, yeah. And like, you know, I was really going through puberty then, you know, so it was a really hard time, like, you know. And I kind of started taking, you know, drugs then, you know. So when I went into Petermark, the response again I got, you know, from the area and stuff like that was totally, you know, a negative response. So I ended up leaving Petermark's, and that time that I cut all my hair off, I left shortly afterwards. I think I worked there for 3 months, and that was it. And because, you know, like I had, you know, I remember like there was hairdressers there and you were like, if you ever need anybody to talk to, you know, they thought I was gay, you know, and they were trying to bring me out. But I was so uncomfortable, you know, with that, like, you know, like I would be disgusted if somebody said something like that to me, like, you know, and, you know, the shame was there and I just would be like completely devastated, like, you know, if you said, so when a stylist said that to me, you know, I just was like a sharp XL there, you know, that was it, you know. And I think I worked in a barber's den for a little while and didn't, you know, didn't like that. I think I worked in a factory and then I didn't work for years then.
It's mad that you, I just say it's mad, but it's not mad, I know that, that you said that, like, you disgust and that someone said that to you. And, because is that what's happening in you?
Because I felt disgusted myself, you know, because there was just this huge shame and, you know, like, you know, like, I would have grown up in the 80s and the 90s, like, this would have been the 90s, you know, so it was only legal to be gay in 1993. So, you know, Dublin, Ireland was extremely homophobic, you know, like, and we didn't even know what transgender was, you know. So it was just, you know, that what I was told about, you know, gay people, like, you know, that they were freaks, you know, there was this, it was all, so this was all being fed to me, you know. And then when I was going through puberty and I realised, like, I was attracted to men, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is actually happening to me. And, you know, all the, like, you know, I'm actually what they're saying I'm going to be. And I was in denial about it. And I was, you know, for most of my life, I was very good at disconnecting with myself, you know, pushing everything down, like, you know, and that's what I done, you know, like it was kind of a coping mechanism, you know, and a way of survival, like, you know, through all that, like, you know.
Because usually in those situations when someone gives you like a comforting ear or something or support and is like, I'll help you. That's when a person kind of like decides, okay, you know, I'm comfortable here. I'm safe here.
Yeah.
So I am going to ask you for support to help me come out as such. Do you know what I mean? So
I wasn't ready.
Okay.
I wasn't ready for that. You know, I just wasn't ready to deal with that. You know, I was still trying to be as masculine as I can. You know, and I was still trying to be like the only reason why I worked in that hairdresser's was because my mum was saying, like, straight men walking there, and, you know, like, and she was making it okay for me, you know, and that's what influenced me to go in, even though I love hairdressing now, you know, but that's what influenced me to go in. So I was still trying to be the hard man and live up to those, you know, those, like, kind of standards of what, like, toxic masculinity standards, like, that, what was going on, like, you know, and, like, to behave in a certain way, you know.
So what was the years following like then for you?
The years following for me were, you know, they were good and bad, you know. I was using drugs a lot, you know. I started smoking heroin at 15. Okay. And, like, I would have been drinking from 12, you know. And that was another, you know, like, I was, like, from 12, like, 13 and 14, I was blowing gas and, you know, I was just doing everything. Like, I remember even when I was working in Peter Mark, like, I used to be blowing the, you know, the air freshener, you know, in a towel and stuff, like, you know. So I was all this kind of, you know, kind of, like, delinquency, like, you know, madness was kind of going on with me, you know. And so as time was going on, like, you know, I started using heroin at 15, and I was just, well, that was another way of me, like, you know, look at me, like, you know, and, you know, because kind of back then you'd be put on a pedestal, or, like, look at, you know, it was Michael at the time, he's mad, and, you know, and people would kind of respect that. And that was going on in my crazy head, like, you know, even though the harm I was causing myself. So it just kind of, you know, escalated from there. I would have gone on to the party scene. And then I did come out as a gay, you know, man at 18. And I was, the reason why I came out was because I had such an attraction to men.
Mm.
You know, and I still didn't know what transgender was. Like, there was no, you know, anyone to represent transgender people on television. There was nothing on the media. You know, anything that was on the media about transgender people was like, you know, Buffalo Bill out Silence of the Lambs, and he wasn't even transgender. Like, he was a psycho. Like, you know, but this is, you know, like, or some kind of, you know, sitcom, like, where they're slagging off transgender people, like, you know, so... It was, there was no kind of, you know, we weren't learning anything. And so I just thought like I was gay. So I put that all those feelings down, you know, me wanting to be a girl when I was younger. I must have been gay, like, and, you know, and that's how I kind of made sense of it.
Okay.
But I was, you know, when I was going into, you know, taking a lot of drugs, like, I was becoming more disconnected with myself, you know, and like back then, like there was like, it was just, there was no kind of boundaries with me. I was up for anything, you know, and I didn't care about myself, you know, like I kind of, you know, there was definitely, I hated myself, like, and I didn't care what happened, you know, and I kind of, that's the way I kind of, I was very reckless, you know, and I went on like that for years.
Self-destructive.
Very self-destructive, you know. And then I got onto the club scene as well. And, you know, I had good times in that, you know. But I was, I've just done it to excess, you know. And towards the end, you know, I was taking seizures from, you know, sitting up too long. And I ended up in a treatment centre. My mum had to get me into a treatment centre. And that was at 20. And I went in and done 6 weeks in the Rutland Centre.
Wow.
But I took, you know, it was like I was very kind of strong minded, you know, and like I wouldn't listen to anybody, you know, and I didn't think I had a problem. I didn't think I was doing anything. But how my mum got me into that treatment centre was because I was started suffering bad with panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
It was like because I was suppressing everything for years. And it just then started coming out of me, like, you know, but it was coming out of me in anxiety and panic attacks. And I wasn't able to cope anymore. And she was saying, you know, I'm just going to use my name, you know, Monique, you have a problem, you know, and, you know, it's the drugs and stuff like that. Like, and even though I was ending up in hospital, each which from drugs, like, you know, from a seizure or something else, like, and I didn't think I had a problem, like, you know, and, but, like, because I was in such, you know, because I was sort of so full of fear and anxiety, you know, I listened to her and I went into the treatment centre.
Because that's what I was going to ask. How does a 15-year-old end up smoking heroin? How do you find yourself in that situation?
It was all looking for approval. It was all looking for me to fit in, you know, and it was it was just to take everything to the extreme, to distract from who I really was, like.
And was that around you, in your community?
Yeah, that was around me in my community.
Because I grew up in the 80s, as like, so like I'm 42 this year. So I grew up then, and so I know what was around then, and heroin was a huge problem when we were growing up, do you know what I mean? So I get it, but like for you to then go on and do that, and then for your mum then to say, you have a problem, so all you listened to her because you wanted to really listen to her, don't you?
Yeah, I listened to her because I listened to her at that stage because I was sick of it, you know, like I was after doing, like, you know, like I was drinking from 12, you know, I was always in trouble in school, you know, I was always, I worked in Petermark for a little while, had a few little jobs here and there, but then for years I didn't work, you know, and I was constantly out partying, you know, like I'd be, you know, drinking to excess, taking cocaine, taking ecstasy, smoking heroin to come down off it, you know, and my life was just full of madness. And it was all great at the start. It was great when the drugs were working, you know, but then the drugs stopped working, you know, to what, like before, but when I was 20, you know, and I was taking seizures and, you know, suffering bad with my mental health, you know, I was having like surreal experiences, you know, like I was like, am I really here? What is life? You know, and, you know, like a friend of mine passed away around that time. And that's after he passed away. That's when I start taking the panic attacks. So I don't know if he triggered something off in me, you know, because my father passed away when I was 4 as well.
Okay.
So I don't know if it was just something kind of triggering, you know, but after his funeral, that's when I started having the panic attacks, and I was having some sort of kind of rock bottom breakdown kind of mentally, like, you know.
So you went into Rutland Centre. You did 6 weeks.
I'd done 6 weeks in the Rutland Centre. And that was the first time I actually started something and completed it.
Right.
You know, so that was like a small change, you know. And I remember when I got into the Rutland Centre, like, I hadn't a clue what was going on with me. I hadn't a clue who I was, you know. And they used to get me to write in, you know, like every night to be a she. And you'd write down like what different emotions was going on. I hadn't a clue what emotions was going on with me, you know. The only emotion I knew about was anxiety. And I just used to write 10 for that and 0 and 0 for everything else, you know. And I hadn't a clue. And when I think back to that person, you know, that was, I didn't know what was ahead of me, you know. Mm. And like if you'd have told me back then that I'd be sitting here now, you know, as Monique.
Mm.
There's no way I would have believed you, you know. And it was just like, I suppose, since the Rutland Centre, it just took me time to thaw out, you know. And it was like kind of peeling myself back. And thank God I survived all that, you know, like, because it was, I was 7 years sober out of my 20s. But I went back drinking then for 10 years. And I would have been, you know, back partying again and stuff like that. And thank God I survived all that, that I was able to get to a point where I was kind of comfortable within myself to be open, to be, you know, my authentic self, you know, and to get to that point where I knew myself well enough to kind of know there was something else going on here, that I wasn't a gay man, that I'm actually transgender, you know.
When did that start up for you?
So that would have started happening for me when I was like 6 years ago, you know. And what happened was I was back drinking and I was partying very heavy. And I was like soul searching, like, because I was after being going to all these like prides and, you know, Grand Canaria prides in London, Manchester Pride. You know, and I was meeting all these gay men, you know, and having great friendships with them. But when it came to, you know, getting romantically involved with somebody, I would always pull away and push them away from me. So I was like, what is going on with you? There's something going on here, you know, because, you know, I was 34 and I pushed everybody away from me. You know, I just didn't like intimacy or anything like that. And so I knew there was something going on. And I went to the cinema to see this fit movie called The Danish Girl.
Right.
And it was about this trans woman in the 1920s. Before she had the first, you know, surgery, you know, construction surgery, you know, so I went to see this film and I seen before she transitioned, she was living as a straight man and she was in a relationship with a woman, and the two of them were artists. And she was dressing up in women's clothes for her girlfriend to show, you know, like for art, like, you know, the girlfriend was painting her. And she was, you know, living as a man at this time. And then I just seen the way I opened Pandora's box. It was a huge realization for her, you know. And I was like, is this what's going on with you? Because I remembered, you know, as a child that I forgot about for years, how I felt feminine as a child. And I used to be raging that I was born a boy. And, you know, that I was into all these feminine clothes and stuff like that. And I knew, you know, from, you know, being in the Rutland Centre and doing a little bit of work on myself, how disconnected I was after coming with myself. And I knew how shameful as well back then that I felt about, you know, femininity and being gay and stuff like that, like, you know. So I had a friend in London, and I asked her, could I come over and dress up? And I dressed, started dressing up, and as soon as I done it, like, it was just, I was obsessed with it, you know, again, because I would have done that as a child. And it was just kind of like, so I just kind of went, you know, 100 miles an hour back into it again. And it took me time, like, it took me a process. Like, I was like, oh no, I just like dressing up because of the attention I get, you know. And it took a good, like, I'd say, I start, you know, medically transitioning.
Before you go on about that, can I ask you, when you first dressed up, was that your first time doing that in London?
That was my first time doing that in London. Couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe I actually done that, because I have a lot of gay friends, you know, and they would put, like, you know, women's clothes on. You know, say we were in a house or something, they would put, like, four jackets on them. I would not go near them. I was the most anal about femininity. And, you know, because I was trying, like, even when I came out as gay, I had to be this type of gay. I had to be this masculine gay, you know, that you didn't mess with, and that was well able for themselves, and, you know, kind of streetwise, and with all this front, with all this image, you know. And I portrayed that very well for years, you know, and people believed that, you know. And it was a shock for them when, you know, I came out as trans, like, you know.
So where did you go that night in London?
So I went to a club in London. It was called the Way Out Club, and I had a great time. Like,
what did you wear?
I wore, like, I had got this, like, black dress off Vera Moda. And I remember, like, I, you know, my head was shaved at the time, like, and I wanted a wig. And, you know, my friend, she was saying to me, just get a synthetic wig. I was like, no, I don't want a synthetic wig. I want a human wig, you know. And she was like, synthetic wigs look good, you know, from starting off. Wouldn't listen. Got the human wig, and I was cutting the wig and everything. And the wig was like a short bob, like, you know. But I had a picture of, you know, of the first time I did, but I deleted the picture, which I'm raging about now, you know. But I still actually have the dress, though. I have the dress at home.
And then from then on, you just went?
From then, like, so it was all kind of like, but when I done it, it was kind of like, you know, I felt liberated. Even though I still didn't know I was transgender, I felt liberated that, you know, I was expressing femininity again, you know. And I kind of got this confidence, you know, and I kind of got this, you know, like, I don't care what people think. And I posted that photo on, you know, my social media.
Did you?
Yeah, on my Facebook at the time, and people were shocked. And but I, there was, even though I deleted that photo, there was definitely a change in me. You know, I was becoming more kind of, you know, courageous when it came to, you know, expressing myself, you know, like me expressing me feminine side, you know, and that felt good, you know.
So you came back home here, and then what was your first night like out in Dublin?
My first night out in Dublin, I went out on a Sunday night. You know, I wasn't dressed up, and I was back to me old self. And I think I stayed out for 3 days, you know, on the session. You know, so it was just, I always, like, kind of stayed out on a session, you know.
Did you lose friends throughout it? Or did you see who your friends were with it?
I didn't lose friends throughout it, you know. A lot, like, I would have a lot of friends that I'm still friends, like, that I would have from a young age. I wouldn't say I lost them, you know, but they didn't get it at the start, you know. You know, but they, we have good relationships, you know. We've been through a lot, you know, over the years. And we have kind of, you know, respect for one another, like. So they, you know, it took them a while to kind of get their head around it. They still could be getting their head around it. But we never fell out, you know. We never, like, we always still keep in contact with each other. And, you know, like, I walk in, you know, Cork Street and they'd be in and out of the shop, and I'd see them, we'd have nights out, and if they need our hair done, we'd still ring each other. Yeah? We'd still be just still a close kind of bond between us all. But we wouldn't see each other as much. We wouldn't be hanging around as much as what we used to.
That's life, isn't it? So you went then, so you started to dress in women's clothes, and then where's the next steps for you?
The next steps for me was, this went on, you know, for a few years. So this was then, I was trying to make it cool.
Okay. You know?
So I thought, like, you know, that I could, you know, bring this revolution to Dublin, like, you know, and have everybody...
Pull that in a little bit too.
Have everybody dressing up, right? You know, so I started a club night.
Okay.
And so I was running this kind of club night, and
where was it? What was it?
Excuse me, sorry. The fourth night was in 22,
right?
And then it wasn't really that successful. Like, I had, like, a DJ coming up from London, you know, like, she'd be well-known DJ, Jodie Harsh, you know, she's a drag queen, really good music. And I had, like, other drag queens, you know, coming from Manchester.
Okay.
You know, like, really kind of well-put-together drag queens, you know, and, like, kind of visionary kind of stuff, like, and... I was trying to bring that vibe, that what was in the UK over to Dublin, you know, and I had a good, like, I'd say I had probably about six nights, could have been even more than that. I put a lot of money into it, but it didn't take off. And I was pretty chaotic myself, because I was drinking and I was taking a lot of cocaine as well at the time.
Right.
You know, so I hadn't got the head, you know, but this was all about me trying to... you know, make, you know, like, club kids dressing up, you know, expressing femininity, all kind of, or even, like, women expressing masculinity, all cool kind of thing, like, you know. Like, it happened in London, it happened in New York, but I don't think it's Dublin. Like, it does happen on a scale, you know, but I don't think it would happen on that scale, kind of what's happened in, like, the likes of London and New York and stuff.
No, I think, unfortunately, it's the Catholic Church, though, as well. Yeah. So it's a lot got to do with it as well, you know. Mm. So then, so you, at any point then, do you get into a relationship? Do you feel you can get into a relationship?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And see, like, at this point, I was kind of finding myself, you know, and I was struggling with, you know, like, what was going on, like, you know. So it was kind of always this, oh, no, I just like to dress up. I like to cross dress and, you know, and stuff like that. And so it was, there was a process going on with me, you know, and I still hadn't got the, you know, the full picture of what was going on. And how many years was I into that? I think I was about 4 years before I actually came out and said I was transgender. So there was nobody serious.
Okay.
You know, there was like little... flickers, yeah. You know?
yeah
but I wasn't seeing. I'm very, like, I'm very independent person, you know, so and I just don't really have, there was nobody there I thought that, you know, you'd get into a relationship with, kind of thing, you know. And to be honest, like, when you are dressing up, and, you know, as transgender women, men see you as a fetish. You know, like, and you know, like, a lot of straight men are attracted to transgender women, but they don't know what it means to be attracted to transgender women, and they think they're gay, and they're not actually gay, because gay men wouldn't be attracted to trans women, because trans women first of all, are women, mm. but they're expressing femininity. Mm. So men, you know, straight men, do want, you know, they slide into your DMs and they want it all done behind closed doors and, you know, keep it kind of a secret, you know, kind of thing, like, you know, and they wouldn't let their friends know, like, and stuff like that. So there's, and unfortunately, an awful lot that, of that trans women would experience that, you know, including myself.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Do you want to talk about it?
That's all I really have to say, isn't
it? You know? I have heard before there's a lot of married men. I mean, won't
they're not just married.
Okay.
You know, like, they're not just married men. Mm. They're all types of men,
mm.
you know, and they're, you know, they're just not educated enough around, you know, trans, you know, trans people, and they think they're gay, you know, but they're not gay, because a gay man wouldn't be with, you know, a gay man like masculinity.
Yeah.
But trans women are expressing femininity, and that's what the straight man is attracted to. They're attracted to the femininity that the trans woman is expressing,
okay.
you know.
And then when you realise that you're a trans woman, like, where's the first port to call to health-wise, doctor-wise, like, what...
So what happened was, so I was, my drinking and drugging was getting more out of control, you know, and because I've obviously stuff was starting to come up for me, but I was, you know, my natural reaction was to suppress it and, you know, and try and push it away and, you know, put my head under the carpet kind of thing. So I remember I was out, like, on another session, you know, still up, like, and I was in this club and my friend was with me and I just burst into tears, wasn't expecting it, and I just says, I think I'm transgender. And he, you know, was kind of like, oh, it'll be all right, like, you know, and we kind of, you know, like, so it was kind of like a shock to him as well. And I wasn't even gearing up to say that. That just came out of me, like, you know, and... we went home, like, to his house, and you know, we kind of, like, set up and stuff like that. So I was kind of like, when that realization was coming in, like, you know, I was like, I want to be true to myself here, you know. And I had some awareness, like, I was like, you are after, you know, suppressing yourself, you know, diluting yourself down to be more socially accepted, you know. So I was like, I need to kind of do things. I need to be true to myself here, you know. And I looked into going to see a therapist. And I went to see a therapist that, you know, specialised in gender identity called Insight Matters, on Capel Street, it is. And so I was speaking to the therapist once a week. And, you know, we were going back in through my childhood and stuff like that. And there was never a time when I was speaking to the counsellor that I didn't think I was transgender. I was just making sure I wasn't crazy.
Right.
I was just making sure I wasn't in some sort of psychosis, you know, from the partying. And I decided when I was speaking to that counsellor, you know, I spoke to that counsellor for a couple of months, that I wasn't going to drink anymore.
Okay.
And I stopped drinking, and I started to go to a group called Tenny, and they're a support group in Dublin and Ireland for trans people. So I was linking in with them, and I was getting as much information as I could. I was going to the group to look to see could I identify, you know, what other trans women, and I was, yeah. you know, and it just felt right, you know. And a lot of people, you know, were saying, you know, because you were after buying into this image, this masculine, you know, kind of tough image that I was after portraying for years. And especially, I think, you know, my femininity kind of really left me after 25, you know. I became more masculine, you know, and... And I, you know, now I'm trying to get the femininity back, like, you know, like I want it back. And
I can't envision you 10, 15 years ago. I just can't.
But yeah, it was. So I, when I, you know, like I was going to start the medical transition, I was, I wanted to do everything right, you know, because I was after, you know, not taking anything very serious throughout my life, you know, and so I wanted to do this right. I knew this was a serious thing, you know, like what I was, you know, what was going on with me. So I knew I couldn't be reckless. And I was out there finding myself, you know, and I felt liberated. I felt more confident. I felt like I had something to live for, you know, and I wanted to be healthy, you know. I wanted to be physically and mentally healthy. So I was just doing all the right things, you know, and I didn't, if somebody, you know, was going to challenge me on it, I wanted to be well able to speak back, you know, to them. And you know, like, so I educated myself, you know, around it and stuff like that.
And educated in what way? So educate me.
So I was, you know, I had to contact my doctor. Well, as I was speaking to the counsellor, I contacted my doctor, and she had to, you know, I had to go in and tell her how I was feeling and that I wanted to start the medical transition. And that, you know, I was suffering with gender dysphoria, and, you know, I told her, like, you know, that I was very disconnected all my life, you know, and that, you know, like, and I rejected myself, you know, because that's what I'd done, you know, because I was ashamed of the femininity. I rejected it, you know, and that I was, you know, that I had to come to a stage in my life where I wanted to be true to myself, you know, and so I told the doctor this, and she was like, are you sure, you know? And I was like, yeah, no, I'm definitely sure. So she sent off a letter to the National Gender Service, and that's what you have to do in Ireland, you know, you have to go through the National Gender Service. And what happens there is you get interviewed. There's two interviews, and they're 3 hours long, each interview.
Wow.
So it's 6 hours. So the fourth interview is with two psychologists. So they go back through your life. There's no questions off the table. They ask you everything, you know. And you get a little break. You do an hour and a half, you get a half an hour break, and then you're back in with them again. And then the second interview, you go to see a social worker. And they make a diagnosis, but there's a 3-year waiting list. There's a 3-year waiting list. The doctor sent out my letter in 2019. I think it was June 2019. And I got to see them, I got to see them 2 months ago. That was my appointment, you know, from that period of time. So, and the period of time is getting longer. It's longer waiting lists because there's so many people coming forward that are saying that they're trans. Because we're being educated about it now, you know, through the internet. You know, there's programs on the television, you know, that is educating us. So we're starting to see ourselves, you know, through the media, finally. Because the media portrayed us in such a bad light for so long. So now we're actually starting to see ourselves, and we're starting to relate, you know. And then we're like, we're seeing ourselves in the world. We're learning about the history of trans women, you know, before us. And, you know, we're like, we're identifying, and that is me, kind of thing, you know. So there's more kind of like trans people, non-binary people coming forward now, you know. And there's a lot of, you know, education around it now, you know, thank God, you know.
And then that appointment then you had, but during that, are you transitioning, before that, are you transitioning or?
No, I'm not transitioning. Mm. So I the appointment 2 months ago, I'm in the middle of a medical transition. But when I went to the doctor first, I hadn't. So I was learning about the information then, and then I had to get my hormones privately. So now there's like two ways you can do that. You can go through the Ireland route, which is you have to go and see a psychologist. There's a waiting list for that as well. Now, you're paying privately for this, and then you have to get two diagnoses. So you go and see, and it's this special psychologist. I couldn't even tell you the name. I can't even think of the name now.
Even the word diagnosis,
I know,
is fucking shocking.
I know.
That's disgraceful.
I know. Mm. Yeah. So there's this other place. They're outside Ireland. They used to be in the UK and they're called Gender GP.
Okay.
So they're a little bit more pretty straightforward, but you do it all online and you have to get a phone, you know, like you do it over the phone and stuff like that. So I went with Gender GP and I started hormones in the 12th of September 2019. And that's when I started my medical transition. I had a little bit of face surgery in January 2020. Just to feminize my face, you know, and my face isn't like much different, but just kind of take the rough edges off, you know, like the brow bone and stuff like that, because most men would be very prominent around our brow bone, so you know, like just to feminize that, like, and kind of shape it down, like, and stuff like that. So after I had the feminine face surgery, then I start presenting myself as Monique, as, you know, female and stuff like that. I got my hair done. Got extensions and easy locks, and that was it, you know. And I just loved my life then, you know. And and I'm the most content, you know, I've ever been. You know, like, I'm not walking around on, you know, a pink fluffy cloud. I have my good days and my bad days, but I'm happier. You know, I'm happier inside myself. You know, and the way I kind of look at it, you know, is, you know, I'm proud to be a transgender woman. You know, I'm proud to be a transgender person. I represent diversity, you know, and there's diversity in the world, you know, and I need to be seen, you know, I need to be seen to be representing diversity. I need to be out in the world, going to work, you know, doing what we do on a day-to-day basis, you know, for people to see, you know, this is normal. I'm just like a normal person, you know, like everybody else, you know.
Can I ask you why Monique?
My name, yeah. Monique. A lot of people ask me that, you know.
Do you mind people asking you?
No, I don't mind, because there's actually a bit of a story to it. So there's this documentary on Netflix called The Queen, and there's this lady in it. It's about drag. It was made back in the 70s, I think, or could have even been the 60s. And there was this, you know, it was about a drag queen pageant. And there was this transgender girl in it, Crystal LaBeija, her name was. And she was a woman of colour. And she came from, you know, a disadvantaged area. And, you know, you just knew by, you know, you knew by her. And the documentary is based, you know, in New York. And so she lost the pageant. She was really beautiful, though, but she lost the pageant. But she fought her corner, you know, and you can see the clip. It's probably the most exciting part of the, you know, the documentary.
Yeah.
It's pretty bland, only for the...
Right.
But she, when she is... you know, fighting her corner, like, you know, and she says some great one-liners that people still repeat, you know, on RuPaul's Drag Race. But, you know, she kept on saying, Monique, darling, Monique, darling. But there was a Monique there.
Right.
So I just, because my name was previous, began with an M, I was like, I'm going to go with Monique, because I just liked what she stood for, you know, like, and she was, and she went on to start, you know, the ballroom scene in New York, you know, and she had her own, like, kind of house, like, there was these Vogan houses, and it was called House of LaBeija and stuff like that. So, you know, I admired her, and because she was saying Monique, and that's why I call myself Monique.
Talk to me about transphobia.
So transphobia, you know, I suppose, like, you know, I would have touched on it earlier. We would have been, you know, represented very badly in the media, in television, throughout all the years, up to only 10 years ago, you know, we're learning about trans and queer people, non-binary people, you know. And so it's like we were you know, trained to think about trans people in a negative way, you know, through television.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's, we're trying, you know, it's about like retraining people, you know, to educate people around trans people, you know, around people, because people have a lot of, you know, ideas, wrong ideas about trans people, you know, that you have no really experience about. They have no, you know, education around. So, like, it's about, you know, retraining people now. And I think, like, Ireland, Dublin is a great place to be transgender.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. We've came a long way.
Mm.
Now, we've still a lot of work to do, but we have came a long way, especially, you know, even to do with homophobia, you know. But there is still a lot of work to do, you know.
Have you experienced transphobia?
Have I experienced transphobia? I have experienced transphobia in an indirect way.
Okay.
You know, never to my face, you know, but I have experienced it in an indirect way.
In what way?
Just like, you would just know, like, by, you know, people, like, you know, they kind of, some women, like, you know, I've experienced, they wouldn't want me around kind of thing, like, and, you know, stuff like that, like.
Do you experience more from women or men?
Do I experience more from women or men? It depends, you know, like, men are very crafty.
Right.
You know? I've never had anybody say anything to me directly.
Mm.
You know, I've got a few weird looks, but never directly, you know, has somebody ever said anything to me, you know.
And then can I ask you about children growing up today? Advice for parents, you know, that their kids are coming out and saying that, you know, mommy, I don't feel like a boy. I don't feel like a girl, you know.
Yeah, so, like, you know, I like it. But for anybody's kid, you know, to come out and say that, you know, like, I know for the parent, you know, it can be hard, you know, but they have to, you know, support their child. You know, they have to go down the right, you know, channels to go down, you know, like, contact Tenny, you know, like, there's an outhouse, you know, National Gender Service. That insight matters. They do counselling for children as well. And they need to support their child, you know. They need to let their child know that they're in a safe place to express themselves. You know, if they want their child to be adjusted, you know, to be confident person and to be comfortable in themselves, and to be able to adjust to life, that's what they need to do, mm-hmm. You know.
Because you find now... Emilia's 11, and so there's a lot to talk about being non-binary, being asexual, being bisexual. And I've always said to her, like, just let's keep an open mind. And she would say, oh, you know, do you think that's for attention, mommy? Do you think they're just doing that for attention? And then you'd have some parents who would comment and say, they're only attention seeking. Like, so I think, do you think that school should be more, you know, involved in the education piece around sexualities?
Yeah, definitely. They need to learn about, you know, queer people, you know, and when I say queer people, like, queer is a big term for a big umbrella of people, non-binary, trans, you know, gender fluid. They need to learn about that, you know, and to be educated around it, because it's a part of life, and it will stop, you know, it will stop people, you know, getting bullied, you know, and stuff like that. And it will stop the negativity that what's around us sometimes, you know. But I do think kids are amazing. You know, I think kids, I find kids with myself, you know, very kind of, they always call me, you know, Monique, my proper name. always, you know, have my pronouns correct. So kids just take everything at face value, you know, and they don't hate, you know, they don't unless they're taught, you know, and I'd say Amelia has heard that somewhere, you know, are you looking for attention and stuff like that, like, you know, because we do just pick up little things, you know, and when you're young, you haven't a clue who you are or what you're about. And, you know, and kids could be just saying it for a reaction, but you can't dismiss it. You know, you have to allow your kid to, you know, explore that and see where it goes, you know, because if you're dismissing it, you know, you're just dismissing your child, like, you know, and you're telling your child there's something wrong with, you know, what he or she or they is saying. You know, so, you know, you have to kind of support and take things slowly and keep an open mind, in my opinion.
Very wise words, yeah. Mm. Yeah, because, like the whole dismissing thing, you have to be really careful not to dismiss them.
You can't dismiss it. You definitely cannot dismiss it. You know, do people would have thought that I was, you know, going through some sort of phase when I was coming out as transgender, that, you know, and when I, before, you know, people that would have known me in me, kind of say 20s, you know, that where I was portraying this kind of masculinity image, and they would have thought that, like, you know, and that's not the case. I was born transgender, like, you know, this isn't a phase, this isn't a lifestyle choice, this is who I am, you know, unfortunately. You know, the environment I grew up in, you know, I couldn't feel I could express myself, you know, and that's why it took me so late to actually find myself and have the courage to come out with it, you know.
Because today we were in McDonald's and it's really like, and I'll just admit it, here in McDonald's and we were going through the drive-thru and Amelia, Aria, said to me, and you haven't met her yet, and she said, is that a he or a she behind the desk? And I just looked and I said, oh, I don't know. And she said, and I said, could be a day. And she said to me, huh? What's a day? Like, you know, and I just was real. I was like, well, she might not be, I think that she's boy or girl. And she was like, mommy, what are you talking about? And I was like, I will talk about that again then. You know what I mean? And until she expresses interest in it again, we'll talk about it again. But she was just like a little thing. And then the girl, it was a girl and she spoke, or could have been a girl, could have been, you know, a day. And she spoke, I hate saying that, could have been a day, could have been a she. And, she's, oh no, she definitely sounds like a girl, ma'am. And I went, okay. I said, I don't know. And then when you were coming today, I said, Monique's coming today. And I always say to the girls, because they say, what's the podcast about? And I said to her, it's about transgender. And she was like, all right. And I said to her, how do you feel about that? And she was like, how do I feel about what, ma'am? She was like, how do I feel about what? Like, you know what I mean? She was like,
yeah. And kids are like that. They're very, you know, kind of, you know, they don't discriminate. You know, there's kind of no bigotry with them, like, you know. And it's just, you know, kids are amazing. When I've always found, you know, my cousins, you know, my own little niece, Eva, she's amazing with me. Like, you know, nothing phases her, you know. And, you know, she's always very respectful to me. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, like, and she would have known me previously, you know, and she would have known seeing me transitioning.
Yeah.
And she just, you know, she is, it just doesn't faze her. It's nothing to her, like.
It was nothing to Amelia today. She was like, yeah, like that, you know what I mean? I'm going to say to him, Paul, you wouldn't just grab that dishwasher as well, just pull it out, because you could hear it in the background. Fill yourself up some more water if you want to. Because I'm going to let you go soon, because I've had you for so long. Tell me about future you.
So future me is, like, I'm in the middle of a medical transition, you know, so I'm going to keep on going on with that, you know. I would like to, you know, complete my transition, you know, and I would like to get into some sort of field, you know, like social work, you know, to help, you know, people in the queer community and stuff like that, like, and help raise awareness, help, you know, educate people, you know, around these issues, like, you know.
But for you, what do you want for you?
What do I want? I just want, you know, I'm pretty content the way things are, you know, at the moment. Like, you know, I'm, you know, the healthiest I've ever been, you know, I'm don't drink anymore, you know, I'm in recovery, you know, and I would just want to keep on going on with my medical transition, you know, and do you mean like love life?
Yeah.
If somebody comes into my life, you know, who I think, you know, there's no BS with, you know, I will be open to it, you know, but they would have to really come in, you know, and I just feel, you know, men, you know, are pretty immature. Not everybody, you know, but the majority of them, they're pretty immature around trans people, trans women, you know.
And so, like, I remember one of the girls, Melissa, or no, it was Amy. Amy did a podcast with me, and Amy lost her arm due to cancer. But she said the amount of men reaching out because they had a fetish. So is it that, like, that? Yeah, they had a fetish. An amputee fetish, yeah.
Yeah.
So would you always be, would that be in the back of your mind when you're going into a relationship, or?
But see, like, the majority of men that message me are, you know, they want, you know, it all done, like, behind closed doors, you know. So, you know, I'm just not up for that anymore.
Mm. Yeah, you just don't want to push it anymore.
I'm over that stage in my life, you know. It was good when, you know, I was all new to, you know, when I was starting my transition and stuff like that, and I was starting to, you know, dress up, like, was good, and it, you know, but I'm over that now, you know, and it's not what I want, you know, and, you know, as I said, like, I'm pretty independent, you know, I'd be quite kind of, like, I can see the bullshit very clearly, so...
But would you like a companion? Would you like...
I would like a companion, of course I would like a companion, but it'd have to be the right companion.
On your terms?
Not on my terms, but just somebody that is, you know, comfortable, you know, with themselves and comfortable with, you know, being in a relationship with a trans woman. So that's all I want. And obviously, like, us to, you know, be attracted to each other, you know, those things, like, what everybody wants.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but... maybe we'll get there, you know, one day, you know, men will kind of change to grow up.
And then tell me...
I won't hold my breath.
No, I know. Tell me this about your recovery. Are you more comfortable in your recovery now that you are your authentic self?
Yeah, I'm a lot more, you know, I wouldn't be able to transition if I wasn't sober.
Really?
No. I wouldn't be able to transition. I was too hectic before, you know, when I was drinking and, you know, using drugs and stuff like that. So I wouldn't be able to be as grounded and, you know, be able to physically transition if I wasn't going to AA and practicing a 12-step program.
Come here, tell me about your 40th. That fucking dress was out of this world.
I had a ball at my 40th. It was probably one of the best nights I've had in such a long time. Really good time. And I felt amazing. I loved the dress. I loved the bodice. And it was brilliant.
You looked unbelievable. That bodice.
Oh, thank you.
I was like, I think I messaged you, didn't I? I was like, I was like, oh, if I go anywhere now, is there any chance I could have a load of that bodice? Like, oh my God, you look stunning.
Ah, thank you.
So you had a great night.
Had a great night.
Good.
Had a really good time.
Right. So on that note, we leave it there. And what we'll do is we'll share all the programs you said and the support networks and so on. We'll share. I know you're going to be like, Rebecca, I'm not sharing nothing with you. Yeah. We'll share it and get it all out there. But thank you so much for sitting down with me. I know you were nervous, but you did yourself very proud.
Ah, thank you. And thanks for giving me the opportunity, you know, to come on here and talk about these issues, you know, transgender, queer issues, because they need to be talked about more, you know, and So thank you for giving me this opportunity to do this.
Pleasure, because you've educated me. As I said, it is all about education and helping people, so thank you.
Thanks a million.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.